Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good afternoon, and welcome aboard to another exciting adventure on Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie, along with my oh-so-cool of coolest, cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Well, good afternoon, Annie. Good afternoon, everybody. We are definitely glad to be here on this Friday, January 18th, and Southern Sense Radio, always a pleasure.
You know, I just
we have a fun roundtable coming up too, everyone. Maybe some of us may not be speaking to each other next hour and a half, so enjoy it while we are.
Hey, I had to throw that Bush guy in there for you, just to get your blood boiling. I posted up in the chat room about our upcoming guests, but I actually accidentally typed in up-dooming. No, they're not dooming. They're upcoming guests. We've got some fantastic guests coming up later on this month. We've got Jerome Corsi, who's coming back. We have the comedian Evan Sayette, who was the writer for Bill Maher. How you can have a conservative as a comedic writer for Bill Maher, I don't know. We'll find out. And then we've got these fantastic patriotic rockers called Madison Rising. This group is phenomenal. And then we also have another up-and-coming author named Kevin Freeman. So we've got some fantastic people coming up later on this month. We've got four fantastic roundtable guests on here. And I want to remind everyone, we do have our site, southernsense.webs.com. I ask you that you do join our site. And I have a new section on the site for contests. And right now, we are going to be raffling off a DVD of Todd Allen Herredon, his video, My Name is America. That's a song we play after every dedication. Well, he's got a video that's been up on YouTube and everything, but we've got a autographed video, a DVD that we're going to be raffling off on our site. So go on to the site, go into the contest area, and all the rules are there. You have to be a member of our site, and the raffles are only $1 each. You can purchase as many raffles as you want. The instructions are right there on the site. So just go to southernscents.webs.com, become a member, and enter our raffle there. We've got a great show lined up here, Mike.
So am I eligible to in this raffle?
No, you're not. Matter of fact, you owe Rick Below some a Playboy energy drink because he's the one that won the tote bag this past month.
Speaking of that, my beautiful mother said something to me like, your Christmas gift, she says, is this person pass away? I said, no. She says, then why is it still in my living room? I'm like, oh, I guess they should have mailed it. I sealed it, Annie, like in like the week before Christmas. Just, oh, man. I just have to, you know how it is in business. That's why they got secretaries and assistants. But anyway, we'll get that out there ASAP. And also, everyone, electronically, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and he has LinkedIn. I mean, Spreaker, you name it, we are right on your lap. Spread the word. This is just the beginning.
We can be found on Stitcher, Spreaker, and YouTube. I'm sorry, not YouTube, iTunes. All right, everyone knows that every show is dedicated to a fallen hero, and this is a hero that just fell this past month. And it took a little research, but I was finally able to find information on him because all I found originally was just a couple of lines, and our heroes deserve that more than just a few words. They deserve our heartfelt thanks. So, Mike, if you would pull up the Army Mix.
Okay.
And this show will be dedicated to Sergeant Aaron Whitman. He was killed in the line of duty in action on January 10th of this year in Afghanistan. And the original listed in the Military Times stated, a decorated 28-year-old Army sergeant from Chester, South Carolina, died in Afghanistan on Thursday, January 10th, when his unit was attacked, an Army spokesman said. Sergeant Aaron X. Whitman was patrolling by vehicle when he was shot and killed by small arms fire, said Kevin M. Larson of Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield in Georgia. Whitman, a graduate of the Citadel here in South Carolina, was on his second deployment in Afghanistan and had previously been awarded the Purple Heart and Bronze Star medals, Larson said. Whitman died in Nangarhar province of Afghanistan, according to the U.S. Department of Defense. He was assigned to 3rd Battalion, 69th Armor Regiment, 1st Battalion Combat Team, and 3rd Infantry Division at Fort Stewart. His brother Nick Whitman, 31, of Quantico, said Aaron Whitman was a guy who got along with everybody. He just lived every minute of his life. He loved fishing. He loved crabbing, Nick Whitman said, adding that the sergeant was very outgoing and had many friends. His brother said Aaron Whitman was passionate about his military service and adamant that the soldiers he oversaw received top-notch training and preparation. I am proud of him. I am proud of his service, Nick Whitman said. Larson said he was unable to provide specifics about the combat encounter. And this I found in the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Sergeant Aaron X. Whitman lived his life his way, on his terms. When he decided to pursue something, he went after it head-on, often accompanied by an infectious smile and optimistic personality, both of which were contagious, according to his friends and family. If a situation was tense, Whitman knew how to lighten it. It wasn't that he took the circumstances lightly, but he knew what to say or could crack a joke that would put those around him at ease. One thing I always liked about Aaron was always one to bring a smile to his face when the situation was a little tough, a little frustrating, said Rusty Fechner, Whitman's classmate at Elk Hurd High School in Chesterfield County. Whitman was a decorated 28-year-old Army sergeant from Chester, South Carolina. He died in Afghanistan on January 10th when his unit came under attack while on mounted patrol in the Nangarhar province, Afghanistan. He was the first U.S. combat casualty of 2013. He was an infantryman assigned to 3rd Battalion, 69th Armored Regiment, 1st Brigade Combat Team, and 3rd Infantry Division at Fort Stewart, Georgia. He had previously been awarded a Bronze Star and Purple Heart. Whitman, a graduate of the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina, knew how to maintain that cool, under-pressure demeanor. As an upperclassman, he worked with incoming freshmen, teaching them how to perform and improve themselves, said Coast Guard Lieutenant Ryan W. Kilgo, who was in Lima Company with Whitman in college. Aaron was a sharp cadet, Kilgo called. He was someone who would want to send. He worked with the underclassmen to build the same character and skill set that he had. Whitman's lighter side was not stifled by regimented military at Citadel. High school classmate Patrick Floyd that Whitman often posted videos on the internet of Whitman and others lip-syncing songs. It was a good time to be around Aaron. I can't ever think of a time when I was around Aaron when he wasn't happy or smiling. He was always a positive influence on people's lives, Lloyd said. Whitman was nearly 2 months into a second tour of duty, a 9-month deployment in Afghanistan, when he was killed. His first tour came in 2007, when a South Carolina National Guard unit was activated during his senior year at the Citadel for a 12-month tour in Afghanistan and deployed near the Pakistan border. He had a choice, and I basically begged him to stay in school. There would be a time for this later, his mother, Carol Whitman, recalled. He was like, no, I made a commitment to these guys, and we're going to go together. I am not backing out. Military service, no stranger to the Whitman family. He is the youngest of three children to join the armed forces. Older brother Nicholas is an officer in the Marine Corps, and his sister Amber is a corpsman in the Navy. All three Whitman children have been deployed to the Middle East. It should come as no surprise that they chose the military after growing up around the world as their father, Dwayne Whitman, a retired Army officer, changed assignments. Whitman and his siblings lived in Saudi Arabia for 4 years while their father stayed there, including a stint during the Gulf War. Neither Dwayne Whitman or Carol Whitman, who served 3 years in the Army herself, ever tried to dissuade their children from military service. Their nomadic childhood gave them an understanding of the world around them. Whitman had opportunities to go to officer candidate school, but he wanted to do it when he was ready. It was something he was considering once he returned from his deployment, his parents said. News of Whitman's death hit hard the close-knit community at L.C. Byrd, where he graduated in 2003, and his mother works in the main office. Whitman wrestled and played soccer for the Skyhawks. Former wrestling coach Paul Rafferty described Whitman as a good role model and team member. Rafferty noted that he saw Whitman and his brother at a party last year, and I was lucky enough to tell him how proud I was of him. Whitman loved surf fishing along the beaches of Charleston, South Carolina. That was the special paradise that his childhood friend, Army First Lieutenant, gave him a ticket. He was also afraid of street. Whether it was painting portraits of family dogs, building a raft to go fishing on a lake, or constructing a homemade cabin, he had an infectious personality. He was the first everyone wants to go around and say, one has died. One of those people who's never upset. And I will follow up with this book. His girlfriend, his fiancée, Sarah Blakely, wrote to the John Jay and Rich Show, which is another radio show. And then she wrote, John Jay and Rich, my name is Sarah Blakely. I am a second lieutenant in the United States Army. Years ago, my fiancé, Sergeant Aaron Whitman, was killed by the Taliban enemy in Afghanistan. Aaron and I were going to get married in September when he got back from his deployment, and a month before I was to deploy. Aaron was the most incredible human being and soldier. He died saving his squad and allowing them to be shot by an army. Aaron was the first one, but I invite you to go to the real Aaron. And I don't know how to get this out, but my thoughts turn to you. Let's go. I grew up in Arizona.
entire Christian heart, knowing your food and what he said this morning. I know they would learn and appreciate and grow in Africa. This country has many women laying down their lives, and the least we can do is honor their memory. So in conclusion, as I'm reading over this, I don't know what I'm asking. We're pushing some way to tell them about your heart, parent, and spirit. Sarah, here you go. Fiance, and to all men and women out there, My Name is America by Todd Allen Harrington. God bless.
Of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. My strength was not taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames.
My name is America by Todd Allen Harrington, and I remind everyone, go to our website, southernsense.webs.com, and go to the contest tab and enter in the raffle to win his DVD, his autographed DVD. And I met him over the weekend at the South Carolina Tea Party Convention. And when he went to autograph the DVD, he was trying to tear the cellophane off. So whoever wins it is also going to win his teeth marks, because you'll see on the edge of the DVD cover where he tried to bite the cover open. But enter the thing. It's only a $1 raffle. You can enter it as many times as you want. The instructions are all there on our website, again, southernsense.webs.com. Mike, we've got some fantastic guests lined up here.
Exciting. And by the way, wonderful dedication. We never can tribute. For those who know, Annie does get shaken up. These are our heroes. These are our men,
yes,
our women, our brothers, and our sisters. And again, one thing we talk about, one thing we don't talk about a lot, of how many lives are so shattered when you talk about a fiancé. I mean, so much is planned for their future as husband and wife and family and grandkids, just shattered at the start. And, you know,
yeah,
these are the people that we owe, my friends. These are the people that sacrificed ultimately for you and I. Great job with it, as always. I had a hard time not getting teared up. I did, literally, so I muted myself. But
well,
oh, boy.
Thank God we played the song afterwards for the dedication, because, I'm sorry, I couldn't even see the paper by the time I was done with that. So, yes,
one of
I
the amazing,
a little emotional.
One of the amazing things about, before we jump into the show, about when we do our dedication each show, it seems like every individual who signs up, it just seems they become so, the brotherhood within the military services is amazing. I mean, they just find exactly what they're searching for. And it's great, you know, I mean, it's one thing. These people are true heroes. So anyway, I'm getting emotional as it is, so we may.
All right.
Anyway,
well,
I'm excited about today's show as well.
And we've got our roundtable all here and standing ready to order. And I'll
Wait a minute. Nick's got to come first. He's the United States Marine.
And we also have someone calling long distance from Afghanistan. He is currently serving over there.
Ooh.
So we've got a great lineup. So let's bring our long distance call in first. He was here in South Carolina. He was the sheriff for Dorchester County. He resigned to become the I'm going to say liaison, but that's not the correct word I'm looking for. He was resigned to become the criminal justice advisor to the U.S. Embassy in Kabul, Afghanistan. He's calling long distance from Kabul, Afghanistan. It's about midnight over there. Welcome aboard, Ray Nash.
Thank you very much, Annie. It's my pleasure to be on the air with you. And I was, just like Mike, I was really touched by that tribute to Sergeant Whitman. It reminded me a lot of my son. My son is a Marine sergeant, and he served a tour in Iraq, and that you were always afraid of getting that that phone call or that notification of some type of tragedy like that. And Sergeant Whitman was killed not too far from here, actually, in the Nangarhar province, on the eastern part of Afghanistan. And so our hearts go out to, you know, his family.
Yeah, our hearts go out to him, and we thank every single man and woman that is out there serving for our freedoms. Let's bring our next guest on. He himself served over there, and he's also known as the Cigar Gunny, the Cigar Marine. People will remember him. His face was splashed across just about every single major newspaper and magazine as they were toppling the statue of Saddam Hussein. Nick Popovich. Good afternoon, Nick.
Hey, thanks for having me aboard. And Ray, hey, thanks for manning the line out there, and God bless you. And, you know, what a great tribute you did to Aaron there, to Sergeant Whitman. I mean, what a great family. The family's nothing but service. And, the part that really got me was when you talked about the nomadic life those kids grew up in, and then he chose to serve himself, as did his siblings as well. Annie, you did the man proud. Good job.
It's him that we should be thanking, not me. Let's bring on our next guest. He's an author, Brett Bratton. He served 30 years as a federal agent in the U.S. Customs and Homeland Security. His new book, which I'm going to be reading, came in today. It's called Homeland Insecurity. Welcome aboard, Brett Bratton.
Thanks, Ann. It's great to be with you.
Yes. And our fourth roundtable person and final is a former advisor to George W. Bush, which I know is going to get Mike all hot and bothered. He's also a turnaround business expert and a TV media contributor, Kerry Zures. Good afternoon, Kerry.
Hi. Thanks, Ann. Thanks for having me.
I'll give you a heads up. My co-host, Cool Mike, is not a fan of George W. Bush. All right. Mike,
okay.
We have a ton of topics here, and one of them that Nick had asked me to bring up, which is in my list here, is Colin Powell's recent tirade against the Republican Party, which I thought was completely outrageous, because it completely ignores what happened when Condoleezza Rice was serving in the cabinet, the names that she was called, the names that he was called when he served under George Bush. And it is mind-blowing how this man who at one point was a presidential hopeful for the Republican Party has turned his back completely on it. Nick, you want to start off?
Well, you know, I got to tell you, and thanks for bringing it up. And the thing that really bugged me when this came out is I'm just tired of the lowering of the bar. I'm tired, and especially from our military, when a general like General Powell comes out and makes a sort of statement, and what's his argument? Code words. Not even the man's actual words. He's saying code words. I mean, that's a junior college rhetorical argument. And so what it reminded me of was back when I was over in the on the Kuwaiti-Iraq border just before the invasion, and Colin Powell was addressing the United Nations, and we're all listening to this sort of stuff. He made a statement, and we all went to war based on the case he made to the United Nations, to the world. And then this man comes out later and says, well, that stuff I said really wasn't true. You don't get to do that when you're the leader. It was either true or it wasn't, and if it wasn't, how did you make that case to the entire world, me, Ray over there right now, this entire nation mobilizes and goes to war based on your statements, and then you think later you can just take them back when it's not convenient anymore. I'm telling you, this man, the words that come out of his mouth are a constant disgrace, and I think he dishonors our military. It bothers me to see a general sink to such depths. I'm tired of this lowering of the bar. You lead by example, and when you're a general, integrity should be number one, and how dare you question somebody else's integrity after what you've done. I mean, to me, the case is that simple. We went to war. We killed a lot of human beings based on this man's words, and then he tries to take them back, and then now he's going to question somebody else's, not even their words, what he's claiming they thought. Not even their actual words, code words. And if you're not familiar with it, that was the case he made on the Sunday morning show, as he's saying these individuals are racist because they use code words. And, that's a child's argument, not a general, certainly not a former Secretary of State.
No, I completely agree. And, Ray, you know, you're here from South Carolina, and actually you've entered your name on the ticket to run for the District 1 seat just recently, vacated by Tim Scott. But when you listen to something that Colin Powell said, and then you reflect to the history of South Carolina, its recent history I'm talking about, we have Governor Haley, who is an East Indian woman, who appoints the only black senator in the Senate. And then Colin Powell comes out with this sort of a statement about the Republican Party.
Yeah, unfortunately, Anne, when you first started this conversation, I missed out. The phone system here is a little bit squirrely, and I missed out on exactly what the comment was that General Powell had made. But clearly, we're in a situation in South Carolina where we've made a lot of progress in the arena of race relations. And, you know, you get somebody like Tim Scott, who's a personal friend of mine, and I've known Tim for probably going on 15 or 20 years now. And he is a great man, and people look past that. People don't look at that anymore. Even in a place like South Carolina that maybe has, you know, a history and a reputation for being racially prejudiced, and perhaps that's a label that she deserved at some time in the past. But when you look at people that are criticizing our current president, they're automatically labeled to be racist. It's got nothing to do with race whatsoever. And I think Tim Scott's a good example of that. It's just a matter of disagreeing with policies. And this whole thing about race baiting is absolutely taking our country down a path that just deteriorates having any type of productive dialogue whatsoever.
No, I completely agree with that. And I just want to let the listeners know that since you are calling from Afghanistan, there will be a slight delay between what we say and what you say. So just let us bear with that. You know, we can't help it. Carrie, what's your view on this?
Well, you know, I'm a little disappointed in Colin Powell. You know, I used to have a lot of admiration for him, and but with the stuff that he came out with here recently, you know, I've lost my respect for him. I think Nick summed it up brilliantly and to the point. You know, he's making comments like there's a dark vein of intolerance in some parts of the party. I mean, that just lines himself up with the division talk that President Obama does, where this country is more divided today by race and class than ever before. And it's just amazing to me how he can turn on the party the way that he did. I mean, he's basically slamming everyone and everything you say. So, I mean, it's to the point now where if you're a Republican or you're a conservative and you say anything against what's going on today, that makes you some kind of a racist. And that's kind of sad because, you know, honestly, I think that America has come a lot further than that. And it's just surprising to me that he would take a position like that.
It is. It's very surprising. And when you also add in the ESPN commentator that recently called RG3, the quarterback who happens to be a conservative with a white girlfriend, a cornrow brother, you know, what they say about, you know, one black guy to another, and they act racist against their own people. It really throws and blows my mind. Brett, what's your take on this?
Well, I can only say from a civilian perspective that, you know, we are as subject to political whimsy as the military is, and certainly the contractor over in Afghanistan. Blessings to you, because I know a lot of our people that retire from the federal service have opportunities to go there as I did and did not jump on it. So I give you credit for that, for going. And it's, once again, leading to the bigger picture, how it affects this country, the same attitude of, you know, Colin Powell and some of those political elites, where we have people, agents, sitting on their hands, not enforcing federal law at the direction of the president because he is catering to a certain class and ethnic group to enhance his political base, as is at the Democratic Party. So we have literally thousands of agents idled that are not helping the states that need help in dealing with illegal immigration. The American families, unlike the military, the American families don't have anyone watching their back. And I guess if I have one mission, which is absolutely separate and distinct from what the military is doing, it's to let them know that there are people out here that do have their backs, but it's just a matter of they have to find out who those people are. It's certainly not the government.
Yeah, and we will be interviewing you at a later date about your book, Homeland Insecurity. So keep in mind, I'm going to bring you back on sometime next month.
Okay.
Now, Mike, what's your take on all of this?
Well, number one is I have beyond respect for anyone in military service. At our nightclub, they get in free. I always try to smuggle them a drink here and there. So, and even what Colin Powell says, as much as what he said regarding the Republican Party, a lot of that I agree with. I am not going to criticize him just for out of respect for his military service. But Colin Powell should have been a Democrat. It's that simple. You know, my family grew up Democrats. They were hard middle-class workers. Nothing's wrong with that. Obviously, it's shifted way, way off to right field, or left field, I should say. But either way, this way his criticism, maybe it's not more justified, but it's mainstream. What Nick said really is beyond burning me, because when he said that on the Sunday show, I do several shows on BTR, and we all do dedications. And to put any of our soldiers, any of them, at risk, was it true or was it false? Either way, why? I cannot even believe. I almost don't want to believe he said that, because just the idea that we could have sent any of our service members, anyone who volunteers like that, to put them in harm's reach for any other reason than to defend the states of America from invasion abroad. I can't even find the words for that. And I can say is that I really, really hope that we went to war for the right reasons. You know, I treasure every military soldier. I treasure every enlistee almost as if they're my brother, my heart and my soul, And I hope that's not the case. It's really a subject I think these gentlemen are more capable of commenting on, because for me, I can't do it without using several colorful metaphors. And let's also remember, in many ways, Colin Powell, he's changed stories on many other political stories numerous times, as far as his opinion. And he has said some controversial things through the years as well. I don't want to comment any further. In close on this topic, I can certainly say I sure as hell hope that we went to war for the right reasons. And if
Annie, can I follow up on that?
Sure. Go ahead. Who is this?
Oh, this is Nick.
Hi, Nick. Okay.
It's Nick Popovich,
yeah,
married to April Popovich.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very blessed. Very blessed on that one. Absolutely. Hey, Mike, I didn't want to give the wrong impression on that. We absolutely went to war for the right reasons. On the ground there, it was absolutely the right thing to do. I believe that in my heart, and I think I can't speak for everybody else. I'll speak for myself. It absolutely was the right thing. That's not what I'm bringing into question. What I'm bringing into question is General Powell, when the war became less convenient to align himself with, then all of a sudden he comes out with this statement that the case he made in front of the United Nations may have been misleading. And if you make that statement, you were the Secretary of State. And I think you don't get away with that. I mean, like I said, a junior college professor sitting in there slamming America, he can get away with that. You were the Secretary of State. You gave the order to send people in. The commander-in-chief gave the order based on your intelligence, based on you. You don't get to say that it's not convenient now, so I'm going to say I may have misled. I mean, I think that is just despicable. And I'm tired of this lowering of the bar. I'm tired of people who are in charge thinking they can just duck responsibility when it's not convenient for them anymore. And I'm not mad at him as a Republican. I'm not mad at him as a Democrat or anything like that. I'm mad at him as an American, as a veteran. This bothers me to see the lowering of the bar, and especially from our military, where integrity means nothing. And when you damage your own integrity for you to try and point the finger at somebody else, it's just despicable conduct. And we see it every day. And I tell you, the other one that really just fumed me on the same vein is Bill Clinton. The President Clinton coming out accusing Mitt Romney of lying. And say, hey, pal, there's only one person in this conversation been convicted of perjury, and that's you. The man who's convicted of perjury is up there calling other people liars. And how do we tolerate this as Americans? You know, and let's look at what he was convicted of perjury for. That was conduct that would get you fired from McDonald's. If you were the manager of McDonald's, you would be fired for fooling around with one of the cashiers. But yet we're tolerating this out of an American president. Yeah, I just can't believe how low the bar is getting.
Bill Clinton criticizing somebody for lying is almost the equivalent of accusing Hugh Hefner of criticizing Hugh Hefner criticizing for skirt chasing. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And one of the parts, I think, in general, the media stirs a lot of this, and they know the right people to go to. And honestly, I think sometimes I almost see a picture of the media more or less being the instigator of many issues, and sometimes they're not issues. This is an issue, but many times you see, I'll give you a great example, not to change the subject, but Trayvon Martin. We clearly know that that's a case in a neighborhood where there were burglaries, which have stopped, by the way, but all of a sudden it's all over the media, racist, blah, 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 or wait a minute. This was a neighborhood watchman and whatever happened. But they do this a lot. And sadly, our military, I feel, belittles. Wait a minute. I think our mass media belittles our military. And that is horrible. That is just an absolute – I mean, it's easy to criticize our wonderful veterans. I mean, look at the Vietnam veterans, how we treated them when they returned home. That is unconscionable, stirred by the media. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I absolutely agree. And you mentioned something about like the Trayvon Martin shooting. And at that point, people are starting to talk about certain gun laws and so forth. Now, recently, we just had the shooting up in Newton, Connecticut, where they this whack job that should not have had a weapon ended up getting his hands on one, which means that weapon therefore was illegal. We now have this huge debate about gun control here in the country. And President Obama pulled a PR stunt and appeared on TV with children to do his new 23 executive orders. And I've read these orders. I've made some comments on them. Matter of fact, my poor husband had to listen to me as I ran them down and ranted on them. But I want to start to get our guest's point of view on this new gun control phase. Brett, you're first.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, where do we start? We're looking at the Bill of Rights. You know, I wish I was a constitutional scholar like Obama is. I could really, I guess, stand him up in the corner. It's no surprise to any of us where the opportunism that he would use, first of all, children, the same way that Stalin and Hitler did in illustrations when they were in power, hugging and holding a child aloft. I mean, it's ridiculous what we're putting up with. I understand Rand Paul and some of the folks are starting to dig their heels in, and hopefully they can make a stand on this and vote it down. But I think clearly we have to revisit the use of executive order. I know that FDR during his term, he used it thousands of times during his four terms. We really have to discuss how we can limit that better so that it does not become an imperialistic form of government as it appears it's headed.
That I agree. There has to be some sort of a restriction on it, where and when they can use it. I would say a national emergency, but in this case, this is not a national emergency. It was an illegal gun used by someone who should never have had it, period. You know, why aren't we dealing with the issue of illegal guns out there rather than legal guns? Kerry.
I'll tell you why we're not dealing with the issue of illegal guns. This is the same person who's now advocating gun control to an extreme measure that we've never seen before, who gave assault weapons to Mexican drug lords and drug dealers, and now he wants to ban law-abiding citizens from having weapons and guns and being able to carry them or defend themselves. This is ridiculous. He invited the children who wrote letters about the tragedy that happened in Connecticut. And that's great, but did he consider, maybe reading some of the letters from the children who wrote to him about their concern about runaway spending and the debt reduction and other things that he got? Did he put them on TV? No, this is purely a marketing play. He does it all the time. He did it with Obamacare when he had, doctors in white suits behind him. Look, this guy is a great marketer. He's a great messenger. He's a great framer of ideas, and he's got the media on his side, and he's putting out his message. The problem he's going to have with all these executive orders that he made is that he's got a divided Senate right now. He's not going to have the support of the Democrats, and he's not going to have any Republican support either, enough to get anything done. But the point is that this is a man who does not believe in the Second Amendment. He doesn't respect the constitutional right that we have in the Second Amendment, and he just needs to come out and say that. And I think Marco Rubio spelled that out very clearly the other day on national news, and this is it. So he's got an agenda that he's pushing. I don't think it's going to go far, but this kind of gives you an idea of where he's coming from, and it's kind of sad, in my opinion.
Yeah. Now, Ray, you come from a law and order point of view, and in all the 10 years I was on patrol on the streets in Brooklyn, I never once took a legal gun off of someone. Every single gun we recovered was always an illegal gun. So they're not, again, I'm going to reiterate, they're not going after the illegal guns, trying to take them off the street. For example, West Virginia has a law, I think it's called Project Expel, where anyone that's caught attempting to apply for a license or does possess an illegal weapon, it's an automatic 5 years. No ands, ifs, or buts. Why can't we approach it in this manner?
I think that's one piece of the puzzle, but I think we're also missing the greater point. One of the other speakers mentioned that there's an agenda, and there clearly is. And this whole idea, this attack on the Second Amendment, is the constitutional issue of our day. There's no question about it. And if we lose this one, I think we just might as well go ahead, give up and go home on the other ones, because that's what it's there for. And people have a fundamental understanding, or misunderstanding, I should say, of what the Second Amendment is all about, what it is there for, why it is such an important one of our rights, why it comes second in the Bill of Rights, right after, of course, the First Amendment, which deals with religion and freedom of speech and expression and all that. But they're missing the point here, is that all of these federal regulations are illegal. They are unconstitutional on their face. The Second Amendment is very clear. A fifth grader can read it and understand that it says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I don't know what part of shall not be infringed they don't understand. But a fifth grader can. Apparently, some of the people that are interpreting our Constitution, some of our government leaders, are not smarter than a fifth grader, and they can't read it for themselves. The wording is quite plain. And understanding the history of the militia was the people. It wasn't a standing army. And so the founders realized standing armies can be abused and can lead to all sorts of other problems internally and internationally as well. And they said, we don't want to have this large standing army. We want to have men and women, well, men at that time, that could be called out when there's a moment of crisis, when there is an invasion, a rebellion, a riot, an insurrection, a natural disaster, whatever the case may be. And we call the people out. But we're not going to give them a gun, so you got to have your own gun. That's what the Second Amendment's all about. And they can talk all they want to about the tragedies that are out there, and clearly Sandy Hook is one of them, and it's just heart-wrenching what happened there. But we got to dig deeper, as you said, into what are some of the underlying causes that would drive an individual to do something as crazy as that. Americans have always had guns, and we haven't had these kinds of problems in past generations. That's where we need to be focusing our questions. And if they want to try to regulate guns and gun ownership, lawful, responsible gun ownership, then they've got something that clearly prevents them from doing so, and that's the Second Amendment. They need to talk, if they want to do this, they need to be talking about repealing the Second Amendment, because that's what the effect of it is. And, of course, they're going to have great opposition to that, and I'll be one of the first. So I think the first thing we've got to do is get the right question on the table, which is the question is not, are guns good or are guns bad, or would less guns mean less violence? That's not the question. The question is, what are we going to do with the Second Amendment? Because right now it's in the way of the liberal agenda to get rid of the guns.
That I completely agree with. There is an agenda. So, Nick, what would your solution to this be? I mean, you're hearing people like Bloomberg, who now wants to have only clips of 7 rounds. Well, excuse me, they do not make 7-round clips. So basically, he's outlawed clips. There is an agenda. How do we counter them? How do we protect the Second Amendment?
The solution is always in punishment. It's always in punishment. Lock up offenders, people who've done gun crimes, lock them up and lock them up for longer sentences. You can't preemptively strike, because this is the thing that's really bothering me right now, is the president's going after a Second Amendment civil right. This is a civil right. And so you have a constitutional issue here. Because I know, like in the military, for instance, if somebody says they're going to hurt themselves or one of their fellow soldiers, the first thing we do is we pluck that weapon right out of their hands. But that's in the military. You start getting the civilian population, how do you take a civil right away from somebody? And to deny somebody a civil right, they need due process of law. You can't deny somebody life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness without due process of law. And that's not a doctor saying, I think this person shouldn't have a gun. That's not due process. So we head into a real constitutional issue. Now, with the constitutional issue, the thing that's really, really bugging me on this issue is that why is it the NRA the only voice out there? Didn't 535 members of Congress raise their right hand and swear to support and defend the Constitution of the United States? Where are they at right now? Why is it a lobby group is doing all the arguing? Now, and I'll caveat that with Rand Paul's out there doing a great job fighting on this issue. But why is it a lobby group is who's fighting this issue? This should be our duly elected representative saying, I'm going to fight for the civil rights of my constituents. And it just shows how much of a breakdown we have up there. And I want to go all the way back to something Kerry said, because I think this is just great. The thing that drives me crazy now is the teachable moment. And he's going to stand up there, the president, he's going to stand up there and lecture us about assault weapons. Once again, the only person in this conversation who's given assault weapons to somebody who shouldn't have them is you, under Fast and Furious. So I'm getting tired of being lectured by people who violated and lectured me as if I did, the law-abiding citizen. And finally on this issue, once again, the lowering of the bar, back to my original thing. If you're the president of the United States, you don't need children to do your talking for you. You're the president of the United States. You got something to say, you say it. Don't stand up there and quote children and have the children do your talking for you. That's cowardly. It's a lowering of the bar. I guess that's what I got to say on this issue.
Yeah, well, what I found interesting is in these 23 points, he leans heavily on the mental health issue, but yet his terms are very, very vague. And you also have from the left people screaming, saying, why don't we label the NRA as terrorists, comparing the NRA to Nazis, saying that gun ownership is a disease, and now trying to get also doctors involved in a police function to find out if someone does have a gun, and basically labeling that person mentally ill. It really disturbs me the way they're trying to now say, if you disagree with me, you are mentally disturbed. Britt, do you find that happening?
Well, we have to look at the institutions that have been emptied out. I'm not sure which administration did that, and that's, of course, nothing being funded sufficiently, so these folks, these psychopaths that are getting their hands on the weapons are actually out of harm's way. And lest we forget, let's go back to what Obama said during when he was a candidate, that we are clinging to our guns and religion. So this is really no surprise to anyone who's been paying attention. The problem is that we've had a dumbing down generationally of American students going through government-run institutions, elementary schools, middle and high school, that don't know any of this history. They don't even write in cursive anymore. So we are looking forward to generations from beyond our time that are going to place this country even further in harm's way, because they've been taught to be compliant, politically correct, and everything else. So I am very fearful that we may be the last of the dinosaurs that are actually willing to take a stand. So in this case, the NRA, maybe they're a collection of dinosaurs that are getting winnowed about because of what we're doing to ourselves. So in terms of the mental crisis, we all know that at the heart of these shootings, there's someone who has an issue, someone that should be really restrained under lock and key, or at least being studied and off the street until such time that if they're safe for us to be back on the street, and we just have abdicated any responsibility for that.
I agree. Carrie?
Well, I have to agree. I think that was well said. I mean, this is, it's not, and it goes beyond that, too. It's not just about the guns. It's about, like, you know, going back to the Colin Powell thing. If you say anything against what this president and this administration is doing, you're a racist. And if you have a gun, you're crazy. And the whole thing about getting doctors involved, I mean, this is just another step of taking more of our liberties away. We're becoming a socialist state, and it's really bad. And it's happening a little bit at a time every day. And before you know it, we're not going to be the America that we were, with the principles that we were founded on. We have a president now that's executing his own will and not the will of Congress. And this is a problem. And I think people need to start waking up, because in a matter of a couple of years, this place is going to look a lot different than it used to be, and it's going to be hard to turn it back.
No, I'm agreeing definitely on that one. I think Boehner is giving away too much of the store. Ray, what's your point? What's your opinion on this?
I'm sorry, Ann, you broke up on me. You're asking me for my opinion?
Yes, Ray.
It's Ray. I'm sorry, the phone system is I'm catching bits and pieces, but most of what's taking place here. Yes, at any rate, something that we need to look at is certainly the mental health system, because that plays a critical role in this overall analysis. But your other speaker is absolutely correct. The media and the liberal agenda continues to try to marginalize people that make a stand on constitutional principles and tries to label us as being, crazies or out of touch or whatever. And look, I don't know that I'm ever going to have to arm myself to protect me and my family against a tyrannical government that's trying to invade my home or take away my liberties or whatever. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. It might not happen in my lifetime. It might not happen in the generation of my children. It might not ever happen. But we can't, we cannot do away with these freedoms and these protections now, because it could happen. It could happen soon. It could happen later. It doesn't matter when it can happen, because these are principles that our founders very, very wisely put into place, because they understood the nature of man, they understood the nature of government. And when you read the Second Amendment and it talks about the well-regulated militia being necessary for the protection of a free state, that's a capital S state. That doesn't mean just state as a generic term for government. That means the state of South Carolina, the state of Virginia, the state of California. The entire Bill of Rights is nothing but a series of limitations on the federal authority. It establishes the jurisdiction of the federal government, and it puts some very clear lines in place. And I think the Second Amendment is very clear. You can't overstep those bounds. That's what infringing means. You can't go across the edge.
That I completely agree with. And Nick?
I'm here.
Yeah. We want your 2 cents.
Oh, it's I was the first one to chime in on this, so we're back around to me. I agree with what the other with what Ray is saying over there, that it's a civil right, and once you give a little bit, and I guess I'd take it back to the guest earlier, who said that how much the media and the left and anybody who disagrees with them gets referred to as Nazis. I think somebody brought up the Nazi thing, and there's a great quote from that time period. It was a Protestant clergyman in Germany, and he said, first they came for the socialist, and I didn't say anything because I wasn't a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionist, and I didn't say anything because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't say anything because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to say anything. And I think that as Americans, we need to stand for each other, stand for each other's civil rights, and stand, whether or not you agree with them, disagree with them, everybody has these civil rights, and we need to stand for each other when they're convenient and when they're not convenient.
Amen to that. Hey, Mike?
Yeah, well, one person's voice is just as important. One person's opinion standing alone is just as important as the million with the crowd. First of all, this past election, I think we noticed a larger amount of military veterans running, Nick Popovich being one of them, than ever. Because I think the people who have recently come back from war, whose allegiance is to the Constitution, period, saw a great injustice being done over the past 8-12 years. I also think there are these groups out there that we don't know about that want to defeat people like Nick Popovich running for office because they're a threat. They're a threat to both parties. And clearly you saw with Herm Cain, the Republican Party clearly launched a assault campaign against him because he wouldn't play ball with the party. Also, the Second Amendment, I'm not a historian, but these veterans maybe can tell me. In the Second Amendment, I think our founders wanted the citizens to have, the militias to have better guns than the government, because the fact of the matter is the Second Amendment is to kill those people who are trying to take our guns away, one being the politicians, where they knew that the federal government, government's there to take. They're not there to give. They're just there to take and take and take. They don't give, and they never give back. So the bottom line was they wanted the militia to have better weapons. And if you're a politician, why wouldn't you want to get rid of guns? Because the law is there to get rid of you. And that's the Second Amendment is untouched, as far as I'm concerned. Anyone who touches the Second Amendment is an enemy. Is an enemy of the United States, in my personal opinion. Fact of the matter is the right to bear arms and Congress shall pass the law are clear. And, Nick, one of the reasons I think they do this and people don't get involved is simply I don't think people really value the Constitution and our freedoms like all of us do. Ronald Reagan made the statement, history provides, those who have the most to gain care the least. And I think that's true today, sadly.
Yeah, that it is unfortunate. And, you know, find it very funny that here are all these people that are protected by armed guards are asking us that are unprotected to give up our personal protection of the Second Amendment. I find it extremely ironic. You know, here you've got Bloomberg, or I call him the blooming idiot. He can purchase his own private army. You know, what is the poor guy on the street that's about ready to be mugged in 2 seconds to do? Excuse me, here's my wallet. Please don't beat me up is the best you can do. You know, having arrested some of these muggers in the streets of New York, it doesn't work. They're still going to deck you.
Just so everyone's aware, I believe a special election will be taking place in New York. Some good citizen got signatures. They're going to New York residents will vote on the on the pop. You only can have a 16-ounce cup. That will be a ballot initiative for the residents for the city of New York, I believe, this year. So, amen to that. I mean, this is the thing, okay, is that it used to be a joke. It used to be a joke. Soon they'll be telling you what kind of light bulbs to buy. Yeah.
They already are.
Joke on us.
They already have been. They're telling us what types of toilets and how much water we can flush. They're talking about putting on these meters onto your water to regulate how much water you can have pumped into your house. It's amazing some of the things that these people are coming up with. And free choice is no longer a popular thing in America, unfortunately. But God bless those people in New York who decided to stand up to Bloomberg. Oh, God bless them.
It was, I believe it was like a Mexican group or whatever. They call themselves the Big Gulp Group or whatever. I mean, good. I mean, if you think about it, we used to make fun of this. Soon they'll be telling us this. Now they are. I mean, unelected officials telling us this stuff. I mean, it is ridiculous. I have a question for Nick. If everyone doesn't. Nick, we all admire you for running, and obviously you made it through the primary and ran in the general election. What'd you come away with, sadly, as far as for that election?
Well, you know, what I came away with is just what a great country this is. And I want to chime in on – actually, I was going to try and chime in on the end of your comments anyway – is – when it seems hopeless, because the biggest voice is the mainstream media, and a lot of times they're very agenda driven, so it leads us to believe that the majority of people think that way. But if you look at this issue right now, this Second Amendment issue, it got a big bunch of media in the beginning, a lot of outrage because it was in the wake of a tragedy. But as you can see, once the American population settled in and got a chance to look at all the facts, They're falling on the side of the Second Amendment. That's why this is going back to Congress. That's why the president. Trust me, if public opinion was on the side of taking away assault weapons, the president would have done it by executive order. He would have went with public opinion and made himself the hero on this thing. But he knows public opinion is against him on this. You can fool some of the people some of the time, but the American people are very smart. When I campaigned, when I went through the community, I found there are just brilliant people out there, just brilliant. Now, because the brilliant people are generally busy moving this country, providing for their families, they're doing all these other things, they're usually not politically active, and it allows for slick politicians to do various things and stuff like that. But I will say my opponent ran an absolutely honorable race against me, ran a clean race, and it was absolutely fair. I just lost fair and square. So what I would say is, having been in the process still works. The American people's voice will not be silenced. You can see it right here. Annie, your show, that's a great example of it. And it's what you do and millions more like you, that the right thing is going to come out in this Second Amendment issue we're facing right now. Because you notice now that it went back to Congress, not a peep, because they know what their constituents think. And that's why this will not go any further. I find it shameful, though, that the debate has to be driven by alternate media. And I think our elected officials need to be a little less worried about their re-elections, a little more worried about their constituency today, now, and get out there and fight this thing. And finally, on that subject, I think we need to look to – there was something that it was a retired general told me when I first started running. He said, politicians worry about their re-elections. Statesmen worry about our country's future. And I think we need to start looking for those statesmen. And I guess I would say the government, I would make the analogy, it's like an engine. It's like an engine. It still runs, and it's still capable of putting out 700 horsepower, but we've been putting a lot of dirty oil in it for a long time. So we need to clean the oil out of that thing. We need to start putting some good material back into that thing to get it running again at peak performance. But it's not broke, it works. I mean, heck, the fact that I got beat probably proves it works, you know. But the system does work, and your voice gets out there. And I'll tell you, the congresswoman who beat me, she's a very liberal. But one thing she knows is there's 100,000 people out there who agree with me. And so she knows that there's other voices she has to listen to now. And she will. You know, the process does work. Even in a loss, it works. So I hopefully don't be discouraged. If anything, be encouraged by my loss, by the fact that an everyday mole like me can get out there in the political process. I mean, heck, I was commanding a tank in the Marine Corps not too long ago, And then there I was on a stage debating a congressman. So it, the process works. It's still in the hands of the citizens. And we just need to make sure it stays there. And we need to stick with each other. What I talked about earlier with those civil rights issues, that, you know, sometimes the freedom of speech is pretty darn annoying coming out of some people, but it's absolutely their right. And we need to remember that when we get mad at what they're saying. But by the same token, they need to remember that they may not agree with me about the Second Amendment, but it is my civil right, and you better be fighting for mine as well. So, and what this government loves to do, what the president loves to do, is he loves to divide us and get us fighting with each other. We need to remember it's we the people. The Constitution only makes one reference to people of this nation, we the people. It doesn't say upper class, middle class, lower class, wealthy, the fair share. It doesn't say any of that stuff. All that stuff's from Karl Marx, the Communist Manifesto, by the way. But the Constitution says we the people, and we need to remember that. And if it divides anything, it's we the people watching this government, watching our elected officials. If there's any division, it's there. And so we need to remember that as conservatives, as liberals, as whatever the heck stripe you are, that we are we the people.
And that is the truth. And, you know, government tends to forget they work for us. We do not work for them. Now, Ray can probably learn a lot from Nick over here because, Nick, having you have run twice for Congress. Ray is coming back to the states very soon so he can go for the first district seat vacated by Tim Scott. And I put up in our chat room a link to the Charleston GOP website. There is a poll going on up there. And right now, out of the 18 people proposed, I mean, 18 Republicans, believe me, that's a huge field for this one seat. And Ray right now is number two. So if they want to go to charlestongop.org, scroll down on the right-hand side. Someone's saying there's a video that's annoying. Just go past the video. Ignore it. And go down towards the bottom of the page. There's a poll there with 18 names. Click on Ray and vote for him. Because last I saw, he was only about 30-some-odd votes behind number one. How's
well,
that?
Right, right, and it's interesting, too, because these other candidates, their names have been out there for weeks now. My name got added to that list just a little over 24 hours ago, maybe 36 hours ago now. And we've gone from zero all the way up to really close to the number one slot there. So I think we're about 25 votes down right now. It's not a scientific poll. It's not binding or anything like that. But it is interesting to see the amount of support that we have out there and the fact that people are interested in these principles that we've been discussing here on your show. And we have some other good candidates that are in there that you know agree with me on a lot of these things. But the folks are going to have to make a decision on who they think would best represent their interest in Congress. And I could learn a lot from Nick. Maybe we need to talk offline, Nick, and you can give me some good tips on running that congressional race. But it would be my pleasure and honor to come back. And somebody, one of your other guests was speaking a few moments ago on one of the other topics, is that we just almost can't recognize the country anymore. And that's exactly what drove me to even consider this thing. I'm sitting in my little hooch here in Afghanistan watching, you know, the Armed Forces Network through the satellite feed, and every day I see more and more of these assaults on our constitutional freedoms. And it's accelerated since the November elections. It's just gone crazy, and it's just a daily assault. So I was really concerned that I would not be able to recognize my country whenever I finally got back home. And it was that thought that really got me in this mindset of, hey, I'm in a position I can do something about this. I can curtail my position here. I can leave early, and it's a big risk. I mean, I'm coming home, but it's like the old saying about the man that had the bacon and eggs for breakfast, is that the chicken was dedicated, but the pig was committed. And my wife and I and my family are committed to this, and we want to come back and be a part of making America great again.
I hope you do succeed. I mean, this field is got some pretty big names. Mark Sanford is right now is getting the most limelight. Larry Grooms, who's the state senator, he's been making the rounds. Chip Limehouse, my state senator, Chip Canson. Also State Representative Andy Patrick, who's been a guest on the show. And you've got some huge names out there. You also got Ravenel. And I don't know how Ravenel still is putting his name out there with his drug conviction behind him, but he's still out there.
Interesting. Andy, I'm going to give you some advice here. Have Nick and some of his fellow Marines go have a chat with your opponents Next thing you know, you'll be the only one in the race there. That's my advice.
I like it.
Absolutely. I love it. Now, Carrie, out of this incident up in Connecticut, Obama, with his executive order, is mandating in his executive order that they appoint his nominee, the ATF chief. And I've got a huge problem with that because the acting director currently is Todd Jones. And Todd Jones went publicly and made a statement, which I'm trying to find the wording of it, and I don't have it directly in front of me. But in essence, he basically threatened the fellow whistleblowers in the ATF that broke open Fast and Furious. Now, how can we ever succeed in having a open government when you have something like this going on?
Well, when you take a look at this entire administration, I mean, isn't it plagued with similar incidents when you think about it? I mean, this is the most unbelievable administration I've ever seen in terms of doing things like what you just stated, his appointments, the things that he does, the Fast and Furious, the Benghazi, and nobody, and nothing's done about it. Nothing. It's a little scary.
And that it is. And Darrell Issa and Mr. Grassley's been trying to get to the bottom of it, but they've been stonewalled. And this has been going on now for 3 years. Brett, you have experience with Homeland Security. What's your take on this?
Well, B. Todd Jones was the U.S. attorney in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I was in Minneapolis and Duluth, Minnesota. He was not looked upon with any degree of favor with any of the federal law enforcement agencies out there. He had definitely a liberal agenda in mind, turned down a lot of cases for prosecution. So we had absolutely zero faith in B. Todd Jones. It's in my book about the Fast and Furious. I know full well what those fellows went through and what his agenda is as far as shutting down whistleblowers. I think it boils down to this. I think the average citizen, I think I speak for probably a lot of those people, is we have no faith in the process anymore. We looked at the returns from this last election. When you saw an excess of 100% support for Obama and nothing for Romney in a particular district, and you have the electoral process, which is part of our fabric, it's not going to be done away with anytime soon. When you have that sort of exaggerated support for any particular candidate, look what happened to Alan West in Florida. When you have decent people that lose their positions, and there's just a bunch of skullduggery that's going on. So none of us, first of all, trust any of the congressmen, which is why either side of the aisle, Boehner, any of those folks, with doing the right thing, we believe largely they're a feckless bunch. So we don't have faith in the people. We don't have really faith in the process anymore. We believe the elections have routinely been stolen or certainly changed, the outcome changed through some behind the scenes, you know, busing people across districts to vote and all of that. And I don't know if this is accurate. I would ask the military folks to comment on this. What was reported in the mainstream media was there was a rising level of support for Obama within the military. We always felt we could depend on the military to stand firm with the rest of us. We had those, you know, the Tea Party activists, everybody going against Obamacare. It still passed. No one cares what we think. So largely we're looking for someone to trust. Now, if we have the military going, throwing in with Obama in larger numbers, who's left? So I would ask the military, is that true? Do they have a rising level of support for Obama in the military vote?
Just a quick comment on what you said, what happened with Alan West. I have to comment on this too. I think it is I think we see a movement in the GOP and their shift to the left as well. When they redistricted, they defended all kinds of districts throughout the nation, but they allowed Alan West's district to go predominantly Democrat because Alan West is a threat to everybody. His allegiance is to the Constitution, period. And he was going to go, he has future ambitions. And Alan West isn't someone you can bribe or buy. It's that simple. The media tried to destroy him, and they couldn't. And Alan West was a bigger threat to everyone than almost anyone. So what did they do? They very calmly redistricted his district, and here we go. I mean, that's unconscionable. Anyway, that was my
Can I chime in on this one?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, so on a few different issues there, I guess I'll take them in reverse order. The redistricting, at least out here in California, because the redistricting happens every 10 years as a result of the census. That's constitutionally mandated every 10 years. So out here in California, a committee is formed locally or by the state to do the redistricting. Once again, this is how conservatives get killed on this sort of stuff, because conservatives are generally the movers of this nation. Liberals are generally the strap hangers. I mean, I hate to generalize, but it is what it is. The strap hangers got nothing better to do than get on these sort of redistricting committees. That's why they always get redistricted, not to favor us. But just so you know, that's your fellow citizens who are doing the redistricting. But it's generally almost all liberals on these redistricting committees, at least out here in California. Now, as far as the military and Obama, the one thing that the Congress knows, the president knows, they all know this. They all know that the military does not vote in any significant numbers. That's why the sequestration, they say cut the military, because we don't have a lobby group, we don't have a union, and we don't vote in big numbers. So when it comes time to screw somebody over, military is top of the list. So we as citizens need to fight for them, because I don't blame them. You know, they're busy out fighting the war. They're not worried about politics. They're busy worrying about defending the nation. And so is there a growing amount of support for Obama in there? Maybe. And, you know, there's always going to be that group of people who just say, hey, I'm going to vote for the guy who's going to bring us home, you know, and whether or not that's the responsible thing to do. And I think if you're heading down that road for that reason, shame on you. But I don't claim to be able to read anybody's mind or anything like that. So I'm not going to try and read somebody's mind as to why they're supporting this man who is absolutely flat out irresponsible as a commander in chief. If you're supporting that man and you're in the military, I would suggest you maybe spend a little time taking a look at what he does for you, and more importantly, what he doesn't do for you. Now, one last thing I would say to the first comment, talking about people having no faith in the election and the electoral process and all that. When I saw the president start talking about these background checks, I thought there is one good thing about this, because if you're going to start identifying people like that, okay. Because there's a lot of gun owners in the United States of America. So next time we go for voter ID, don't give me this baloney that we can't voter ID. If you want a background check, every gun owner in this country, we can certainly, if you want to identify them, good. Let's compel everybody who wants to vote too. And Maxine Waters and some of these other loud voices, every time we go for voter ID who claim it's racist, where are they now? Well, isn't this racist then? Isn't this discriminatory? Doesn't this target one group? For a background check, how are they going to afford that? Because that's the argument we hear about voter ID. It should be the exact same circumstance. It's the exact same circumstance. It's just the one group doesn't make the argument. So I would say as far as those pro-Second Amendment representatives up there, which should be all of them, because all of them raise their right hand and swore to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, but somehow it tends to fall on only certain representatives decide they want to defend the Constitution. But those individuals should be making that same argument that they've been hearing about voter ID with regard to this executive order.
Yeah, now I got to say, South Carolina institutes voter ID as of January 1st. And right now they've been running ads in the newspapers telling people that voter ID will be in effect and how to be able to vote, you know, what type of ID is eligible and so forth. So South Carolina been able to uphold the voter ID law.
Annie, according to the Constitution, that the conduct of the elections, at least as far as representatives, senators, and the president, is up to the states. However, it says that the federal government can enforce by law at any time a fair election. And you've seen it with the 14th Amendment. You've seen it with the 19th Amendment. You've seen it with the 26th Amendment, I believe it was, where we did federal law that superseded all state laws, and that was first African Americans' right to vote, then changing the voting age to 18, and then and also women's right to vote. All those were cases where the federal government came in and made a federal law that superseded all state laws. And I think voter ID needs to be that one. And now back to our military again, we got men and women over there dying overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan to ensure they have fair elections over there. And at the same time, their absentee votes are being erased by every fraudulent vote. I think that is a moral crisis. I think that's an ethical crisis we have going on. And I can't believe that more representatives aren't making the case for why we need to have a voter ID. And let's use the president's own words. If we can save only one life, we need to try this. Okay, if we can protect only one, because they'll say it's very ineffective. Okay. But it is effective. It does work to some degree. Certainly, you'd have to be a fool to think that it's going to make a less good election or a less accurate election. It'll certainly make the election even slightly better. And let's use the president's own words. If we could only make one vote better, we need to try. You know, they pick and choose when they want to be when they want to stand for civil rights. And I would say most of the liberals are complete frauds when it comes to civil rights. And it's a shame that they've been perpetrating this on the American people for as long as they have. They're complete frauds on it.
Not only that, in their frauds, they look like they portray themselves as they have these titles or they're in careers to whereas you wouldn't think they're like that, but they are. And that's the thing, is that they're fake. You know, with certain liberals, they're such proud liberals. I have more respect for someone like that than someone who's a fake liberal. I mean, some of these liberals they're so damn proud of their liberal. They sound like a Roman Catholic on Easter Sunday. They're just so proud of their liberalism. Well, on the other hand, what you just said, many of these people disguise it. And that's basically President Obama, because he says all the time, well, I'm a believer in the Second Amendment. Yeah, right. Anyway, go ahead, Annie.
Yeah, well, also what's not being reported in the news is the complete disregard of the military vote. And in this past election, you saw where a military transport carrying ballots for the troops crashed, and for some reason they weren't able to get ballots back to the troops in time. You had states late in sending ballots to the troop for whatever excuse. They can send out absentee ballots to their own voters here stateside, but they couldn't get them out in time to the military. That is
inexcusable. Well, they also sued certain states to keep the military from having the extended days to vote because they were overseas in active duty, which I thought was ridiculous.
Absolutely.
Well,
that was also done.
Every fraudulent vote is erasing one of those votes.
And not to mention that they found thousands of ballots from the military that were discovered after the election still in boxes that conveniently never made it to the count.
Yeah, and suspiciously were opened and gone through. So Lord knows how many of them were changed illegally, and none of this has ever been reported in the media. But if you
Fox News did an extensive study on it, but the problem is that it's one network, and you know the viewers that are watching it get it. Unfortunately, other people don't tune in; they don't get it. But they did a big study on the fraud, and it was exposed. But again, it's one media outlet.
Yeah. And then you ask one person for ID when they go in to vote, and they go in an uproar. But if that same person goes to cash a check at a bank that's not their bank, and they're asked for ID, they have no problem. You know,
you can't
okay
buy cigarettes, you can't buy a beer, you can't go anywhere. You can't go into an R-rated movie without an ID. When you get pulled over, you have to have an ID to drive a car. You have to present it as an ID to the officer when he pulls you. You have to have ID to open up a bank account. You have to have an ID to do everything. And there's nothing wrong with that because we need to know who you are. And to say that it's discriminatory in voting is absurd, but yet it goes through. And we have the Obama administration going around suing states saying it's unconstitutional to ask somebody for their ID to vote. But you have to have your ID for everything else except for that.
Nick, I know you wanted to comment, but I want to follow up. You have to have ID in school, I believe middle school and higher, around your neck at all times. At all times. So, I mean, they're getting how in the world you can do everything, you need an ID for everything, including getting into school, but not to vote? Oh, jeez. Nick, go ahead.
This is Ray. If I could jump in for a second, you know, people think that voter fraud is not existent or is very minor in the United States. That's absolutely not true. I went through three elections as sheriff. We saw all types of voter fraud that was going on during that time. And here's the deal. It's a very simple solution. If somebody doesn't have their ID, they can still vote. You just have to do a challenge ballot. So they fill out a special paper ballot. It's sealed up, and it's documented properly with the poll manager. And if that vote the voter then has the ability to come back, have their ID, prove that they're who they say they are, so their vote can still get counted. It's not that they're being disenfranchised at all. They may have to go through a little bit different procedure, but they can still vote. They're not being turned away at the door and not allowed to cast their ballot. So the whole thing is ludicrous, and it's all done to protect their ability to pull off some of these fraudulent activities on Election Day.
That's exactly right, because if they did exactly what you said, we wouldn't have all these fraudulent votes making it to the count. And that's exactly right.
Exactly.
Yeah, now,
as we wind down, I want to throw a question out. Let's have everyone just comment on it. All my life, I couldn't wait to vote. I was at the door an hour early before the election place even opened when I became 18. What in the hell has happened to our Republican Party? I'm almost on the verge of insanity, thinking they're almost the same as the Democrats. Am I alone here? I mean, we even have...
No, you're not. I agree with you. I think that they...
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I agree with you. I'm very disappointed with the Republican Party, because we're caving in to these media blitzes and attacks on the Republican Party, and we know what our values are, but all of a sudden now we have to redesign ourselves. We have to rethink our positions and become a party that will attract more people, because, you know, we're becoming a party that can't associate or relate to America today, which is BS. We know what our principles are. We need to stand firm with them, and we need to not deviate. We don't need to reinvent ourselves. We just need to go back to the founding principles and stick to them and not back off. And we have to have representatives that are going to stick to that and not cave in.
Amen to that. We're down to our last 3.5 minutes. This whole hour and a half has flown past. You gentlemen have been fantastic guests. Brett Bratton, your new book out, Homeland Insecurity, Kerry Zuros, and we had Ray Nash, who's coming back to the United States to run for District 1 here in South Carolina, and Nick Popadich. You also have a book out, Nick, and I'm trying to remember what the name of it was. It was called...
Actually, I have two of them. One's a Marine, and the second one is the Ultimate Marine Recruit Training Guidebook. And
holy
thank
cow.
You for mentioning them.
Okay. Do you have them here over at Paris Island, too?
if we don't ask for them, I'm not sure if they're in the bookstore over there. They are out here at MCRD on the West Coast.
All right, because I pass Paris Island every time I go to the Bilo. God bless and
be sure to go in there and mention it.
Matter of fact, my grandson just graduated this past November from boot camp. So, yep.
Semper Fi.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We got to sit on the back of the car. My grandson's a Marine. All right. I want to thank each and every one of you gentlemen, and I welcome you back anytime. Ray, when you get back stateside, give me a shout. We'll see what we can do to get you around.
I leave here Sunday, so I'll be back home on Monday. So it's just right around the corner. And I appreciate the opportunity to come on your air and on your show, and I'll leave you with my tagline, which is send a sheriff to Congress.
Give
All
them
right.
hell, Ray. Give them hell, Ray. Don't stop. Just give them hell.
All right. I welcome everyone back again on Tuesday. Tuesday, our guest will be Jerome Kersey. He'll be coming back to join us. He's always a fun, fun guest. And we've got great guests lined up for the rest of the month. So check out the calendar on southernsense.webs.com and also enter our raffle there on southernsense.webs.com. So until then, be safe, have a great weekend, and good night, and God bless to each and every one of you. Good night.
God bless America. Thank you, everyone.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. American.